You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Chwaba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who does his own stunts, Pete Chwaba.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Nightlight, hour number two, also known as Act Two. Of our little showbiz entertainment current event fun show. Great to have you with me on this Tuesday night. We got to light it up tonight, folks. Like, the fireworks are still happening, which in Marinette, Wisconsin, by the way, they still are. It's like fireworks month.
Yeah.
And it goes on forever. But if you are just joining us, we had a lot of fun in hour one. We talked about why it seems like after vacation is when you catch up on rest. Some vacations can wear you down. And I did so much socializing over the 4th of July weekend. I can't believe it. There was a local family that had all their kids together. They had a big parade. There were people just walking around and hanging out. And that gets, socializing can be exhausting. So sometimes you got to go back to work to catch up on your rest, which is the case with me here tonight. We talked to Tamara Dean, an author of the book Shelter and Storm, At Home in the Driftless, a really good book. I didn't read the whole thing. I got about 40% through it, but it's a compilation of essays written by Tamara Dean about her life, trying to find an easier farming life in the Driftless area. And apparently that's kind of a thing. Could you ever do that, Todd?
I'm not sure. I would like to, right?
Yeah.
Like you said, reading it, you're like, gosh, that would be such a great life.
I wish I was more like that.
Yeah. But then again, like she said, well, I got Lyme's disease and I really couldn't do it. It's gotta be a really tiring thing.
Yeah, you probably feel guilty just sitting at home binge watching something, which is half my life.
I bet it wouldn't happen. I bet you would not binge watch anything.
In my mud brick home, you don't think I would do something like that?
I love you, Pete, but I have to tell you something. I could not see you living in a mud hut house.
But it keeps the insulation in and the warmth. Yeah.
You'd be out there trying to sweep the dirt floors, you know?
It would be awful. Our question of the night is, what makes a bar a dive bar? We'll get to your text in just a minute. We've got to play catch up a little bit with text, but what makes a bar a dive bar? We heard some great answers. Stickiness, a couple dancing without a dance floor and no music, a girl dancing at the jukebox, the sound of dice. What were some other ones we heard, Todd? Peanut bowl.
Oh, yeah, right.
Disgusting. Swearing in the signage.
Absolutely.
Those people don't care.
That's
Choppers
right.
Backed up to the curb. You name it. But keep those texts coming if you want to be part of the show. 855-752-4842. 855-752-4842. What I'm hearing you say, Todd, is there is no room for couch potatoes.
Potatoes, that's right.
To do their own farming or build their own adobe house in the Driftless area. But that's okay. You know what I just found out during the break?
What?
It really sucks when you think you're making progress and you're starting to look better, and then you catch your reflection in a gelato store window and say, oh, dear God, out loud.
How you doing on that, by the way?
On what? Gelato? Pretty well.
I think we can all see that you're doing well with the gelato. How are you doing with the diet and the healthy living?
Well, obviously, I took a little powder this weekend on it, but...
Yeah.
I eat pretty well and I do fast, but sometimes I don't know. I'm losing about a half a pound a week.
It's not bad though.
It's okay. It's sustainable and I don't mind. I am eating healthier one day and you reap all the other benefits. It's not just about weight loss, I guess.
How long have you been at it and how close are you to your goal?
I will not live to see my goal, sadly.
But, okay.
About 8 weeks of pretty solid fasting. When I started, I was 400 pounds, and now I'm down to 250. But here's what I find out, I'll ask you about this too, because I know you tried it. When you do that, your brain is so sharp. When you fast or when you do, you get rid of some of the glutens. I can't believe how quickly I can... think. No, but your brain does, I think, work faster.
I'm not sure that mine did. I did sleep better, right?
Yeah.
I slept a lot better.
Sure, yeah.
The gummies helped too. But I do relative in general, I have more energy.
Yeah.
And I'm still doing the fasting thing. I'm a little
Good
bit looser on it. And I'm down to my original goal weight, but I want to do some more. But like the last 3 pounds have taken me a month and a half, you know?
Yeah, that happens though. I think when you hit 40, you
40 years old, 40 pounds. What are we talking?
40 years old. It takes longer. It just takes longer, and you can't lose faith. You have to stick with it. So anyway, there you go. Folks, at 7:20, Chris Foran from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel will be joining me here at Nightlight to talk about the 50th anniversary of the creation of Miller Lite. We'll also talk some TV and movies. But I think this is great that you're here tonight, Todd, because as you have this great side hustle as a paranormal investigator, and I want to talk to you about the Miller Caves. And you brought this up. You said they're supposed to be haunted. This is a great transition between now and Chris. So I was just reading about them a little bit. Young lovers haunt the Miller Caves.
I mean, I don't know specifically if that's what it is. That's the lore based on everything going on there, right?
Okay.
These caves were created underneath the streets around the Miller Brewery and all that kind of stuff. Back in the day when there was no refrigeration, they had to keep the beer cold. So I think until like 1906 or something like that, they were using these to store the beer.
Yeah.
And through the years and doing investigations, I would sporadically hear about the haunted Miller Caves and all that kind of stuff. Apparently, it's a couple tragic lovers, and they are found wandering the caves at various times.
Are they based on real tragic lovers, meaning they didn't know what they were doing sexually, or was this sort of a bad accident, like a Romeo and Juliet type thing?
I don't know the exact background of the couple themselves, but I can say that a couple of groups have investigated there. The group that I was with tried to get in. We were not able to schedule a time to get that done. But if you ever get a chance to check out that location, even if you don't get to go down in the caves, there's so much history there at the brewery and stuff like that. You've got to go just to check that out. It's awesome.
I think you also mentioned, this is interesting too, when I was reading about the Miller Caves and keeping beer cold, I thought, and I was kind of told this, that when beer gets warm and then gets cold again, that's what makes it skunk.
Yeah.
But Dave Hansen at Flick's Brewhouse in Madison, who created the Nightlight beer, Hazed on Radio for the Wisconsin Film Festival, told me that it has something to do with sunlight. And that's why they keep it in darker bottles. It's harder for the sunlight to get in, maybe?
I've heard that about wine and stuff like that, too. The sun, isn't Miller Lite in clear bottles? It used to be, if it's not anymore.
Miller Lite is in dark bottles, right?
I thought it was in clear. Or
Miller High Life is clear. The champagne
there
is
you
in
go.
Clear bottle.
Well, champagne, the beer. But speaking about ghosts and breweries in Milwaukee, I did get to investigate the Pabst Brewery down there.
Yeah, what's that story?
That is incredible because they literally, when the place was shut down, they literally came in and said, "We're done, everybody go home," kind of thing. And so when you go in, it's like going into an old ghost ship, like opening the door and seeing everything still there.
Whoa.
You go to people's desks. There's the phone. There's their notepad with notes on it. There's like family pictures on the wall. There's a list of extensions for the people. I mean, it was literally like walking in the day after a place shut down, but only, I think it shut down in like the 80s. I'm just guessing, but 80s or 90s. It's like going back in time.
That is so crazy. I guess in Chris's article, he talks about how when they closed the Pabst brewery down, they farmed it out. So they still made Pabst. My uncle Pat Murphy, no relation to the brewer's manager, was a Schlitz salesman for forever.
Yeah.
And so I grew up hearing about Schlitz forever. I don't even know if they still make Schlitz, do they?
I'm not sure, but I do know, talk about skunky beer. Schlitz, those were my dad's. Schlitz, once in a while Pabst. Red, White, and Blue.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Blatz.
Sure.
Blatz.
Blatz, yep.
And his big one was Old Style. He swore by Old Style. That was his.
Old Style has such cool signage. I remember tasting Old Style when I was like 21 and wanting to like it, but it just...
Yeah, it's not there.
Didn't quite get there. Yeah. It was like a bad ginger.
It's no Spotted Cow. Let me just say that.
I didn't know you liked Spotted Cow, Todd.
Really? You didn't know that?
I knew that. Our question, this plays right into our question. And if you have a haunted dive bar, you can share that with me too. But the bar, what makes a bar a dive bar, folks? Chris Casper says gambling machines. I think I read that one. Let's pick up here. Chris also says dead animals on the wall.
Yes, you got to have those.
Wow, he knows all about dive bars. I'm wondering if Chris has a home. I'm starting to think he just kind of goes from dive bar to dive bar.
And why he hasn't invited us.
Yeah, exactly. Chris also says they still allow smoking, even though it's against the law.
Right.
That's a great tip of the hat. Jim from the 920, he says, yes, peanuts in the shell on the bar and peanut shells all over the floor. And one, I've never heard this term before, and one-holer bathrooms. He says classic dive bar traits. Well, that's, I've never heard that before. I guess it means one turlet, right?
I'm guessing, right?
Ross from Crawford County says, dive bar stickiness, yeah. No tap beers, kitschy sayings on the wall, loud conversations between people that are sitting right next to each other. The bartender going outside every 10 minutes to have a cigarette. Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you, Ross. From the 715, the hand dryer in the bathroom has the instructions partially scratched off with joke instructions.
Yes. Have you seen those?
Yes, I have.
Push butt is what it would always say instead of push button.
He says, example, push button. Now reads push. That's so great. Here, I got another one for you.
All right.
And this is kind of restaurants, too. When you go into the bathroom and there's just a bar of soap.
Yeah.
There's no sanitary soap situation. There's a restaurant I like to go to in Marinette. They just have a hand dryer. They have and then they have the door you have to lock. You have to touch the lock and the handle to get out. You have no, I guess you could use toilet paper, but you're taking your chances there too. That, you know, it's terrible. But the bar of soap is awful.
And see, this is one of the reasons why I couldn't see you living in an Adobe hut someplace. Can you believe it? I had to touch the door to get out of the. Yeah.
These mud walls are filthy. Tom from New Berlin says, Ham's beer merch was so cool. That it was, Tom. Great text. Thank you, buddy. Jim from Appleton also says, Miller got the original recipe for light from an Appleton brewery, Meisterbrau. That's what we'll talk about with Chris.
Nice.
Jim's ahead of the curve here. He says it was in the basement of the Skyline Comedy Club.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. I haven't been inside that joint in like 30 years. So there you go. We've got, here's Terry from Ashwaubenon. He's in the 920. He says, Todd, the hardest working man in radio. Nice to hear you tonight.
Hey, Terry, thanks for tuning in. I have to tell a quick story. So one night I was working in the grocery business, okay? And for some reason, my boss decided we were all going to go down to a strip club in Milwaukee. Okay, so we went. There was a woman named Tarzana.
Ooh.
Her job was to take beer cans and crush them in her endowment. And so we left and we were coming back and we're driving down 41. And there, you know, those bars that were in a house? So there's a bar and then there's a door and there's the person's living room, right? Right? So it's late at night. We walk in and the old woman is sitting in her living room, but she's sleeping watching TV. And there's only three of us. It's late at night.
Oh, wow.
It's close to bar close. And we wanted beer, but we didn't want to wake her up. So we put the money on the counter, poured a couple of beers. We did some dishes for her. We did some mugs.
Gosh.
And then we left. That was the best experience of my life. Not, you know, take away the Tarzana thing, but yeah.
Well, that had to enhance it, though. When you say endowments, you're talking about above the equator, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Well, I would hope so.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what's going on.
Crush cans with that.
I don't know what's going on. But I think clanking dishes, wouldn't that have...
We were very quiet, and yeah. I think she had had a few.
That's fantastic. Chris Casper has not finished being heard from tonight. From the 608, condom and sex toy machines on the wall in the bathroom. He lives in a dive bar.
I'm going over to Chris's house. See you in a bit.
Chris, have us over. Chris Foran from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is coming up next. We're talking Miller Beer and Movies. It's Pete Schwabba and Nightlight. And great to have you with me on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. So glad you're here tonight, folks. It's a Tuesday. On a summer evening, this is when summer flies by after the 4th. Once the 4th is done,
yep.
You might as well be watching NFL football. So our question of the night is, what makes a bar a dive bar? That is what we are asking all the couch potatoes tonight. Let me know. Todd, I'm going to let you read that because you know Terry. So I would love it if you read that.
He says, I saw Tarzana and baby dumplings, at least 400 pounds, at the former Bamboo Room on Main Street pre-marriage days. There was a place on Main and Green Bay called the Bamboo Room.
I'm more intrigued by the fact that he said pre-marriage days, which means something must have happened.
I think he was just trying to say I'm a good guy, but I saw Tarzana.
I've been in some bad places as a married guy, and I remained a good guy, I'm proud to say.
I did get a Polaroid that night for my, and I don't know what happened to it, so.
Oh boy. All right. That is the voice of Todd Michaels. He is sitting in for Conrad tonight, and we are going to keep the show moving along here. I'm very excited to get to our next topic and our next guest. He joins us frequently. He is an entertainment writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where he does fine work, and he joins us now over the stream, Mr. Chris Foran. Hey, buddy.
Hey, Pete. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks. How are you? Did you have a good holiday?
Okay. Yeah. Well, I was working, so...
Yeah, sounds like it.
It's our long march through Summerfest.
I was trying to, in your email, what were you saying you did there? I had a little confusion with what you were.
I edit most of this, almost everything that gets written. I work seven of the nine nights during Summerfest.
Oh my god!
Piet Levy, who I know is a longtime friend of the show.
Yeah.
Piet does all the hard work. He lays out he looks at the lineup and says, okay, here's who we should cover. Based on, everything from audience metrics to, hey, this is an up-and-coming person, we need to be on this one. And then we work out, we assign them to freelancers, or Piet does a lot of reviewing. And then they all go down to Summerfest every night of the festival, and they all file their reviews all at the same time. And I edit all of them.
So the last thing you needed was to come on the show tonight. All the more reason I appreciate your time.
I'm glad to be here. Was
Summerfest overall, would you say, without going into doing too much of a deep dive, good attendance, or do we know these numbers yet?
No, we don't. If it was good attendance, we'll know probably by Thursday. If it wasn't, we'll know about 4:45 on Friday, which is when they've often announced bad news. it's hard to say. There were a couple of nights, like the last night it was jam-packed on the grounds, but a number of the other nights were not. Part of this three-weekend format that they had was to avoid those slack nights, but apparently that was not the case.
I know a lot of the purists still have issue with how they do the three weekends now, and people still complain about it.
If you look at anything that Summerfest posts online, the very first comment is, why don't you go back to 11? Every single time. I've said this in many other contexts, that the pandemic gave a lot of institutions cover to make a change that they always wanted to make anyway.
Okay.
And Summerfest had been looking to do this forever. Because they have the one advantage of being 11 nights in a row is that it's becomes the rising tide that swamps all boats. Nobody wants to take it on. Restaurants would close, bars would close in Milwaukee. Right. Nobody will book a show opposite it. But when they go three weekends, first of all, it falls out of mind for 4 days. And then, just as importantly, we only have a few weekends in summer here, so
you can't
take them all. And so the last couple of years, there's been huge concerts and other events opposite Summerfest, and they've survived okay. But they did this because the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday were terrible for them. Business was awful, and Thursday night is a night that people go out, and Friday night and Saturday night, obviously. So it made sense. I guess it helps with some booking some shows, because nobody wants to play on a Monday or Tuesday either.
Right.
From a business perspective, it's a very smart move. From a culture, perspective, the jury is still out. Well, the jury isn't out. The jury has spoken. They don't like it.
Yeah. That is the voice of Chris Foran. He writes for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Does great job there writing about entertainment and show business and all kinds of fun stuff. Chris, I'm so excited that I was going to do our usual movie and TV talk, and I usually bring up one of the articles you've written, but this one was really fascinating. You talked about, the creation of Miller Lite in reference to its 50th anniversary and how that more or less saved brewing in Milwaukee. Can you elaborate?
Yeah. Miller introduced Miller Lite in 1975, and they had bought, 6 years before that, Miller Brewing with the Miller family, well, they had sold parts of it off to a different company, W.R. Gray's, but in 69 it was bought by Philip Morris, who they know how to market stuff better than anybody, as all the cigarette addiction would tell you. And they set out to first to fix Miller High Life, which was the only national brand Miller had at the time. And if you that's where we got Miller Time. That's where we got, if you've got the time, we've got the beer, all those great early ads from them. And then, but they wanted to have additional products. So in 70, oh, I can't remember, 72 or 70, 72, they bought Meisterbrau, which was a Chicago-based brewery that was in bankruptcy.
Right.
And they wanted to see what other products, and one of the products Meisterbrau had was something called Meisterbrau Light, which had two things going against it. One, it was marketed as diet beer, which is an oxymoron no matter where you go. And two, it tasted terrible. So by consensus at the time, that people would buy it once and never buy it again. So they went into their labs, they worked on made Miller Lite lower calorie, lighter, less filling sort of beer. And it's really kind of a pure lager in that sense. And we used to have a great beer writer at the paper, Kathy Flanagan, who talked about how, when craft breweries came out, they all started doing IPAs and things like that, because you can hide mistakes by putting extra flavors in there. A lager, you can't hide anything because it's those very simple ingredients. And, it was a big factor, so they were able to make it very consistently.
Hey, Chris, let's pause right there and come back and continue this conversation. Chris Foran is here from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We're talking the 50th anniversary of Miller Lite, which saved brewing in Milwaukee. We'll elaborate more after a very short break. This is Pete Schwabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network. And sometimes it makes me feel mellow. Makes me feel
mellow. If you've got the time, we've got the beer, Miller Beer. It's time to relax. Miller stands clear, beer after beer. If you've got the time, you've got the time. We've got the beer, Miller beer. If you've got the time.
So there were two cuts on there, Pete, just so you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, it should be 30 seconds, probably.
Yeah.
Beautiful. I can listen to that 8 times in a row.
And I still know the words. I can still sing along. You were talking about great beer commercials.
Right.
Great commercials that you never forget, right?
And that was the first thing when I read Chris's article, Chris Foran, who is joining us now over the stream from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. That's what made me think of that. And I loved commercials like that. That's an actual song. That's kind of catchy. It's not one of those commercials where they say the name of the product 18 times to hammer it into your head because they want you to run to the store immediately after the commercial. Chris is here. We're talking about Miller Beer. It's the 50th anniversary of Miller Lite, which Chris, in his article from yesterday, said kind of kept Milwaukee Brew City. Chris, we were talking about Meisterbrau Lite, which you said was not tasty. And that was derived from, according to your article, Gablinger's diet beer. Is that where they got the recipe?
Yeah, this guy had sort of invented it. He's a kind of a legend in the food industry, and he just kind of created it, but it didn't taste very good. But he had gotten a way to get beer as a low calorie thing, which was not a thing. So they worked out a way to make it taste better, and then they put the same machine that they put behind rebranding Miller High Life behind Miller Lite, and we all know what happened there. All those taste great, less filling ads, and all the different millions of different ad campaigns, just and executed perfectly through over the years, and it hit at the right time. That was in the mid 70s was the time when people were looking apparently for a lighter kind of a beer, and the boomers were starting to get into full metal drinking, When you look at the numbers in the industry, when they started with Miller Lite, Miller was probably fourth or fifth nationally, maybe sixth, and by the end of the decade they were number two, and it's pretty much where they've been since. And at the same time they were growing you know, Schlitz was the big brewery in Milwaukee forever. Schlitz was number one or number two forever in the country, let alone Milwaukee. And Pabst was not too far behind him. Miller was third forever here. And then while Miller was growing, first with High Life and then with Light, by 1983, they sold more Miller Light than Miller High Life. And Schlitz had, you know, they came in late with Schlitz Light, as did Budweiser came in late with Bud Light. And Pabst didn't figure it out at all. Well, they had something like Extra Light, I think it was called. But by then it was too late. They were not catching up. And by the end of, you know, by 1981, Schlitz was gone. All gone. They closed. And Pabst just continued to shrink and get involved in hostile takeover fights. And they were out of the picture by the 90s. And so it's a tiny stretch, but not too much to say that Miller Lite, because of Miller Lite success, Miller was able to stay in business and stay strong and keep that image going of Milwaukee being a place where there were hundreds of people making beer and doing this stuff. If they had gone the same way as the other breweries, I don't know what that would have meant here.
It's fascinating too, Chris, because like, as you say in the article, Fred Miller and his son died in a plane crash, I think in the mid 50s. And then Philip Morris comes in and buys a controlling interest. And they were great at advertising. So who knows what would have happened had that tragedy not taken place, but also just if Philip Morris didn't get involved. When those commercials came out, Taste Great, Less Filling, I remember as a kid seeing them and thinking it was a great commercial. It was athletes I recognized, which is huge in advertising. And then it had, you know, these great debates in a bar. Do you think they knew what a great ad campaign they have, or do you not really know that until it's successful years later?
I think they know what they were doing. I mean, these are the same people who invented Marlboro Country after all. You know, but at the same time, I don't think anybody could have seen it as a cultural institution. There were not a whole bunch of commercials that were, you know, part of the culture. I mean, there were lines that, you know, by the 70s, TV, it was so widespread and so dominant that, you know, there were Alka-Seltzer jingles were part of your, you know, you know, and a part of a daily life. And so it was part of that, but they just did it for so well and for so long. They released cookbooks and did all sorts of crazy stuff. They had public appearances for commercials, you know, really? And yet
that's
they did.
Crazy.
And it just kept it going in a way that it probably couldn't have done it otherwise.
Yeah,
I mean, because part of the reason they launched Miller Lite at all was they wanted a second national brand, and Miller High Life was a national brand, but it was all they had, and it was never a top three or four beer. Even I mean, that Pabst and Schlitz were everywhere. They sponsored, you know, Schlitz sponsored the circus parade in Milwaukee and the 4th of July fireworks, and Pabst had radio shows on national radio, and they sponsored wrestling on television. And
Well, you also mentioned in your article that four of the top five beers now in America are light beers. If that's the case, why as a country are we still so tubby?
If you look at the ingredients in any five food items you buy, I think that would be perfect. One thing the story that I wrote does not address is that beer consumption in general is down. Alcohol consumption is also down in this country.
Yes, I've heard that.
Younger consumers are doing other things. And so I think there's all sorts of reasons. I think it could, maybe we're just really living out WALL-E. I have no idea.
Chris Forn is my guest. He writes about entertainment and the biz at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and joins us here frequently on Nightlight to talk about movies and TV and tonight beer. Chris, you said you saw Jurassic Park over the weekend?
I did.
Sorry. I saw it too.
I had seen some things that made me encouraged about it, and I had a window to see something, and I thought, well, I'll go see it. And it was better than the Jurassic World Dominion, which I saw in an airplane because I had almost no other options, and I really didn't like. It was okay. It wasn't good. I was hoping it would be fun. What partly got me excited about, or not interested in doing, is that I had been running into over and over people, especially in their 40s and 50s, talking about the movie that kind of like changed their life, the movie that really got them excited. And almost every to a person, they always bring up Jurassic Park, the first.
Oh, wow. Really?
And it is really good because, surprise, surprise, it's done by Steven Spielberg, who is probably our best, America's best storyteller, certainly in the last 50 years. And, I think you mentioned Jaws in one of your spots this week.
Yeah.
And, 50 years ago this summer. And he's got some movies that weren't great, but there's so many that are so good. And Jurassic Park, yeah, there's great dinosaurs and all that stuff in there, but the story is really good.
Right.
And they see some of the ingredients in these later movies, like after the first movie, they all have to have kids in peril for some reason.
Right.
And in the first movie, there's actually some subtext for that. The Sam Neill character doesn't really want to have kids, and his girlfriend really wants to have kids, and he's becoming an unwitting father figure to people, and he kind of likes it. The rest of the time, there's these other movies that's just peril,
I think it's weird because, like, Steven Spielberg, I don't know that Spielberg could make 7 great Jurassic Parks. It just becomes tired after a while. And how do you, part of me is like, how do you, you have dinosaurs. It's like having access to the Beatles catalog and you make a bad Beatles movie. You have dinosaurs. And I saw the film and I liked about 2/3 of it. I could do without the scene between Scarlett Johansson and Idris Elba where they're talking about a past tragedy that never even tracks throughout the movie. It's just, right. You don't need so much of it. It's like, give us the dinosaurs.
Right. Well, if you watch any of the Bourne movies, for example, by the time they got to the end of that, the ones with Matt Damon, Damon was going through the script and just taking out dialogue all over because he said, we don't need to be talking here. He's not a philosophical guy.
And
I'm not a big fan of the Top Gun movies, but they know what they are, and like the Mission Impossible movies, they give you just enough plot. They give you just enough character. And if you're along for the ride, you're along for the ride. It's always a reminder to me that it's really hard to make a good movie. It's kind of a miracle when it happens.
True. That's a great point. What else was, F1, the Brad Pitt. Mm-hmm. I talked about it somewhat extensively last week. I thought it was a good video, not a good movie. Mm-hmm. Wall to wall music, Chris, like it never let up. What was your take on F1?
I always have to preface this. I am not a car person.
Same.
I'm still disappointed that of all the Star Trek things, we didn't get the transporter. We got the communicator instead. I liked it more than I thought I would, but I guess I would put it in the same category and same director, not surprisingly, as something like Top Gun Maverick, Brad Pitt knows who Brad Pitt is, and he does a really good job being Brad Pitt.
Yes.
And I thought those things were great. I thought the relationship with him and the younger driver was kind of obvious in particular, very similar to the one in Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that it stayed in the course that it was going on. I could see racing people not liking it because there's just not that much racing in it, I thought. I mean, lots of intense close-ups, and I thought I won't spoil it, but there's for some people, but there's some cheating in the narrative toward the end where you think something might happen. It's like teased, like, oh, this could happen. This bad thing could happen. And it doesn't happen because, of course, it's not going to happen.
You got me racking.
I've seen so many dull movies. It was okay. I didn't find myself checking my watch, which is for an action movie. That's usually my first.
I was checking my watch because it's 2 hours and 36 minutes. I mean, you're right, but the racing scenes, I'm like, yeah, more of this. It's a racing movie. Like I felt like it was Bull Durham meets Top Gun. The tropes or the plot lines were, but if you're just looking for a popcorn movie and some great action, that it definitely had that. No question.
I mean, it has a beginning, middle and end. It makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I could say the same for Jurassic World Rebirth. I'm not really sure how the world got reborn. I'm still puzzled by that. I've never done it. So part of the reason I wanted to see it also because David Koepp wrote it.
Yeah.
Who wrote the first one? And he's Wisconsin's own, Pewaukee.
UW-Madison, yeah.
And he's written some very good movies. And
well, some are just paychecks, right? I mean, he's written a lot of great, he's a great writer, but it's not always about the writer. It's the director, the producer.
Well, there's so many people involved.
We have about a minute before we have to do a break, Chris, and I'm hoping you can stick with us just for a couple more minutes after the break. But there was another movie I wanted to ask you about, but I want to ask you about Poker Face. I've heard a lot of cool things about the show. Poker Face and how bingeable it is. You liked it.
I do. I haven't had time to do the full blown binging on it. It's the central character, Natasha Lyonne, plays a woman who can always tell when someone's lying, which is great until it's not for her. You know, she can make a lot of money gambling until they figure it out, and then she gets in trouble. She witnesses a murder. She figures out a murder and ends up going on the run in the first episode. And then every episode she's in a different place, kind of living paycheck to paycheck. And it's sort of like a modern version of Columbo in a lot of ways, because she figures out, we see the crime, but she figures it out on her own. Very, very entertaining.
That's awesome. I love your comparison to Columbo too. We'll have a couple more minutes with Chris after this very short break. Don't go anywhere, folks. We're live again, back on the air after a long weekend. Hope you had a great one. And thanks for being here tonight. We'll also finish up and read some more of your texts. That's all coming up next on Nightlight with Pete Schwabe on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
To a burning ring of fire, I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire.
I've caught myself before I actually break into song when I hear a song I really like coming out of a break. It's Pete Schwabe and Nightlight. Welcome back, folks. Great to have you. We have a few more minutes here. Tony the Trucker says, in regard to our question, what makes a bar a dive bar? Pete, if both restrooms are one-seaters, it's a dive bar. That's great. Tony also says, also, if the only food they served are pickled gizzards, eggs, and pig's feet, that I almost started dry heaving when I read that. And then Anna from Madison in the 608 says, welcome back, Pete. Hi, Todd. A sign of a dive bar is a big mouth billy bass on the wall. That's another good one. Wow. I think all the Nightlight listeners have spent a fair amount of time in dive bars. My guest is Chris Warren. We have a few more minutes with our pal here who writes for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and does great work there writing about entertainment, movies, and TV. And we were talking about the show Poker Face, Chris, which you compared to Columbo, which I think is a great comp, even though I haven't seen Poker Face. I just mean great in what you're comparing it to, because a lot of people still love Columbo.
Right. It's amazing how it's kind of got this life of its own. And I think that, and especially when you get into the more sedentary set of us, among us, that those kind of crime shows always done really well. I remember when we used to run cable TV ratings, the number one show on cable almost every week was the 4 p.m. episodes of NCIS on cable.
Oh, wow.
Because it's, well, procedural crime stories, you know what's going to happen. They're going to solve it. They're going to get the bad guy, and it's fixed.
Yeah.
You know, I would say Poker Face is a little bit, and she's not a cop, so there's a little bit, it's a little bit wryer than that. Okay. Justice generally wins out, but it wins out in a way that, you know, she's not the one, like, you know, booking them or something. It's different. It's very 21st century, that it's very, you know, it's not cynical about people, but it's cynical about the process. And so she works through it. It's a wonderful character. I haven't got to this. I'm still getting to the second season. I just had gotten back getting to Peacock. So it's worth watching, though. Definitely.
My good friend Dale Myron, who shot my film, The Godfather of Green Bay, mm-hmm. who is no longer with us, unfortunately, great guy, but he worked on the show Poker Face, and he went on and on about it, and I can't believe I still haven't watched it, but more people are finding it after the second season came out. So that is definitely on my list. So thank you for that, Chris. One last thing I want to ask you about, the Phoenician scheme. Yeah. What Wes Anderson, what's his newest? What did it do for you?
Well, it, you know, what's the line about Charlie Brown? Of all the Charlie Browns, he's the Charlie Brown. Wes Anderson is definitely the most Wes Anderson of all Wes Anderson. Sometimes you can go too far for that. If things have bugged you in Wes Anderson movies, this is not a movie for you. But because it's very much like it, it's a little more episodic than his other. Well, his last couple of movies have been sort of that way. They're not really a straight through story. It was fun though. It's just, every movie he makes now has, like, everybody you've ever heard of is in it. You know, this one has Tom Hanks and Bryan Cranston and Bill Murray is back after not being in it for a couple of weeks, and Riz Ahmed, and just young, old, and he finds like new people he discovers he throws in there, and it's about this guy who is this mysterious billionaire who everybody's trying to kill apparently, and he's trying to give his estate to his daughter who's a nun, and they're like going around trying to fix this one last deal, and it isn't really about that, but it's about family and about other things, but it is very if you're not into that sort of thing, it can feel very precious in a hurry, and
oh boy.
So it isn't for everybody. I mean, and some of his movies are lovely from start to finish, regardless of that. Like Moonrise Kingdom is a fantastic movie. And
I have to see that. I still haven't.
And Royal Tenenbaums is really good, and Rushmore is really great.
My favorite is still Bottle Rocket, Chris.
It has a
charm.
I know a lot of people, that's their favorite.
Yeah. Hey, thank you so much for your time. As always, my friend, get some rest after Summerfest and after this conversation, because I know I pepper you with tons of questions. So appreciate your insights, pal.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. Anytime. That's Chris Foran. Check out his work in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and definitely check out that article about Miller Lite. Very cool stuff. This has made me want to go to a dive bar. I almost wish I still drank. Maybe I'll start up again. It's probably going to be a Night Light episode that's going to make me start up again at some point.
I mean,
I'm not there yet.
There's a couple of places right down here if you want to go for one. I'm buying. I don't know with what at this point, but
these places are too nice. Those aren't dive bars.
I know. There's got to be. We can find one, right?
I think so. We got to go in there and just lower the rent. Tomorrow night, folks, another fun night here on Nightlight. Frank Hermans, the legendary Frank Hermans, founder of Let Me Be Frank Productions and tenant of the Meyer Theater. I think Frank is awesome. He will be here tomorrow night in studio. And then Madison film critic and CityCast Madison newsletter editor Rob Thomas will join us, as he so often does. And I can ask Rob about the movies I did not ask Chris about. See how I do that, Todd?
I see how that goes.
A little shell game here. Yep. of entertainment writers. So join me tomorrow. Todd, this is so much fun, man.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. I miss you already. Todd Michaels, ladies and gentlemen. You know what? I'm going to take it out on Conrad tomorrow. I'm going to lay into him.
Listen, you should do that anyway.
We'll do that anyway. Are we good on text? Are we good to get out of here? What's the story?
I think so. You got about a minute left in the show.
I got to kill a minute?
Yeah, it's only 58:50.
This new time clock.
You're still not working on
it? No, I'm totally working on it. But once in a while, somebody else produced recently and cut us out like with 2 minutes left to go. So we had to play basically the whole song. But I'm used to it by now. But I just got thrown. So thank you, everybody. Thank you to my guests, Chris Foran and Tamara Dean. Check out her book, Shelter and Storm. Thank you for all your texts. As always, so much fun here with the Nightlight listeners that we do here every night from 6 to 8 p.m. on a nightly basis. Conrad's coming back tomorrow. Todd will not be here tomorrow night, but it's been an absolute pleasure serving with you tonight, my friend.
Absolutely.
All right. On behalf of the lovable producer, Conrad, and the kick-ass producer, Todd Michaels, good night, Wisconsin.
Peace out.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.